inanimate, unliving things. My computer is a hard system, as are the colors in this office's reception area. Soft systems are either animate, living, or ideas. You are a soft system. So is the script for Hamlet. Information systems are those that provide us with information about the interaction between the other two. Inventory control, cash flow forecasting, and sales activity summary reports are all information systems. The innovation, quantification, orchestration, and integration of these three kinds of systems in your business is what your business development program is all about. What follows are examples of each and how they integrate to produce a desirable result. Hard systems. At eMyth Worldwide, we used to use whiteboards extensively in seminars, internal meetings, and conferences with clients and prospective clients. Since the vast majority of our work with clients is done by telephone, fax, and mail, rather than in our facilities as we did when the eMyth was first published in 1986, we have few such meetings today. As you've probably guessed by now, our facilities were operated, and of course still are, under rigid standards of color and cleanliness. Color standards at the time dictated that we use white boards rather than black ones, and blue markers rather than white chalk. Unfortunately, our color standards also dictated that our walls be white. It wasn't long before a conflict developed between our standards of cleanliness and our standards of color. At the end of a seminar, a meeting, or a conference, the person accountable for that particular event was to leave the room in the order in which he found it. This included cleaning the board work, which was not our employees' favorite job. Not that they wouldn't do it. They would. But in their haste to get it done so they could get on with the work they preferred to do, the eraser would often fly uncontrollably over the edge of the board. It wasn't long before our once gleaming white walls began to show ugly streaks and smudges of IBM blue ink. It drove us crazy. We mounted an all-out campaign. We held blue ink on the walls meetings. We wrote memos entitled, "To All Personnel, Subject, Blue Ink on Walls." We created new board cleaning policies. We created cleaning teams. We created wall tours. We created board spot checks. We installed signs above every board saying, "Be careful." But no matter what we did, no matter how hard we tried, no matter what we said to our normally meticulous people, blue ink got on the walls. Our only apparent recourse was to paint the walls white over and over again, or go back to blackboards and white chalk. Neither was acceptable, and that's how our prevent-a-smudge system was born. We had one standard that insisted on impeccably clean walls and another standard that made the first one seemingly impossible to uphold. White boards, white walls, blue ink. In short, we had a conflict between what we wanted and what we had. The two necessary components of conflict. The essential conditions for innovation. The conditions that give birth to a system. But a third component was needed to translate the conflict we were experiencing into remedial action. Will. We were determined to lick the problem and would not rest until we had. Will, applied to any conflict, creates energy. Conflict without will creates frustration, an engine turning but going nowhere. Conflict with will creates resolution, a movement beyond the dilemma. Voila, the eMyth Worldwide Prevent a Smudge System. It was so obvious. so simple. We installed a clear Lucite collar around each board. Extending 4 inches out from each edge of the board, the Lucite collar literally stopped the blue ink carnage in its tracks. In one fell swoop, the walls were clean. Our people were delighted, our clients amazed. The constant painting, memo writing, sign creating, team invading, policy polluting activities that had pervaded our organization for more than 3 weeks were history, and all because of a 4-inch Lucite collar. A hard system for producing a human and totally integrated result. A system solution to a typically people-intensive problem, without anyone having to pay attention to it, leaving me free to write this book or anything else I care to do. After all, that's the purpose of a system, to free you to do the things you want to do. Soft systems. Things need to be sold, and it's usually people who have to sell them. Everyone in business has heard the old saw, 80% of our sales are produced by 20% of our people. Unfortunately, few seem to know what the 20% are doing that the 80% aren't. Well, let me tell you, the 20% are using a system, and the 80% aren't. A selling system is a soft system. And I've seen such systems produce 100% to 500% increases in sales in almost no time. What is a selling system? It's a fully orchestrated interaction between you and your customer that follows 6 primary steps. 1. Identification of the specific benchmarks or consumer decision points in your selling process. 2. The literal scripting of the words that will get you to each one successfully. Yes, written down like the script for a play. 3. The creation of the various materials to be used with each script. 4. The memorization of each benchmark's script. 5. The delivery of each script by your salespeople in identical fashion. 6. Leaving your people to communicate more effectively by articulating, watching, listening, hearing, acknowledging, understanding, and engaging each and every prospect as fully as he needs to be. At eMyth Worldwide, we call it the PowerPoint Selling System. A career development company we work with put it in the hands of people with no experience, and revenues increased 300% in 1 year. An advertising agency put it into the hands of people with no experience in either selling or advertising, and revenues increased 500% in 2 years. A health spa put it in the hands of people with no experience, and revenues increased 40% in 2 months. If you put it to work in your company, it will do the same for you, no matter what kind of business you're in. The PowerPoint selling system is composed of 2 parts, structure and substance. Structure is what you do. Substance is how you do it. The structure of the system is all of the predetermined elements of the process and includes exactly what you say, the materials you use when you say it, and what you wear. The substance of the system is what you, the salesperson, bring to the process and includes how you say it, how you use it when you say it, and how you are when you say it. Structure and substance merge in the selling process to produce a far more extraordinary result than any single salesperson can do if left to his own devices. Let's look more specifically at the most important component of the PowerPoint selling system, what you say, or what we call at eMyth Worldwide, the PowerPoint selling process. The PowerPoint selling process. The PowerPoint selling process is actually a series of scripts defining the entire interaction between the salesperson and the customer. These scripts, or benchmarks, are 1. The appointment presentation, 2. The needs analysis presentation, and 3. The solutions presentation. The appointment presentation. Most people fail at the outset of the selling process because they don't realize the purpose of an appointment presentation. Most believe that the purpose of an appointment presentation is to qualify the customer and ascertain whether or not he is a viable prospect. It's not. The purpose of an appointment presentation is one thing and one thing only: to make an appointment. The appointment presentation moves the prospect from where he is to the second benchmark in the process, the needs analysis presentation. It is a series of words delivered on the telephone or in person that engage the prospect's unconscious. Remember that? By speaking primarily about the product you have to sell rather than the commodity. For example, "Hi, Mr. Jackson. I'm Johnny Jones with Walter Mitty Company. Have you seen the remarkable new things that are being done to control money these days?" "What new things?" "Well, that's exactly why I've called. May I have a moment of your time?" "The product? Financial control. Control is the key. The presentation tells Mr. Jackson that there are things going on in the world, remarkable new things, that he doesn't know about. He's out of control. But he can now become familiar with them, gain control, by just spending a few moments with Johnny Jones. And it tells him that instantly. Mr. Jackson's emotional commitment is already made. All that he needs now is to find the rational armament to support it. That's what Johnny Jones' job is. That's why the appointment will be made. Simple and effective. It makes appointments. To do what? To deliver the needs analysis presentation. The needs analysis presentation. The first thing you do in a needs analysis presentation is repeat what you said in the appointment presentation to reestablish the emotional commitment. For example, "Remember, Mr. Jackson, when we first talked, I mentioned that some remarkable new things were going on in the world to control money?" The second thing you do is to tell the prospect how you would like to proceed to fulfill your promise to him. For example, "Well, what I'd like to do is to tell you about those things. At the same time, I'd like to show you some incredibly effective ways my firm, Walter Mitty Company, has developed to help you control money here in your business. Okay?" The third thing you do is to establish your credibility in the prospect's mind by communicating two things. First, your company's expertise in such matters. "We are money-controlling specialists. We, at eMyth Worldwide, call that a positioning statement." And second, your personal willingness to do whatever is necessary to utilize that expertise on his behalf. For example, "Let me tell you why we created our company, Mr. Jackson. We found that people like yourself are continually frustrated by not being able to get the most out of their money, frustrated by paying higher interest rates than they have to, by working with financial experts who don't seem to know what they're doing, by banking with a bank that doesn't seem to have their best interest at heart, and so on. Do these things ever frustrate you, Mr. Jackson? Of course they do. And that's why Walter Mitty Company has created a money-controlling system that makes it possible for you to get the most preferential treatment in the financial arena while paying the least for it. Now, I know that sounds too good to be true, but let me explain how we propose to go about doing that for you. Here, Johnny Jones is communicating that he understands what frustrates Mr. Jackson and that he has the expertise to alleviate those frustrations, not personally, but systematically, through the use of the Walter Mitty Company's money-controlling system. The fourth thing you do in a needs analysis presentation is describe the Walter Mitty Company's money-controlling system and why it works so well. Not what it does, but the impact it will have on the prospect. For example, the Walter Mitty Company's money-controlling system is designed to do three things, Mr. Jackson. First, it enables us to know what specifically bothers you about controlling your money. Because we know that controlling money must be personally tailored to each and every one of our clients. In order to do that, we've created what we call at Walter Mitty Company a money management questionnaire. By asking you these particular questions, we're well on our way to helping you get what you want. Before I leave today, I'll review the questionnaire with you. Once the questionnaire is completed, we return it to our financial systems group. This is a group of financial specialists who review your questionnaire to make certain that it has been completed accurately. If it has, they enter the information into our money-controlling system that has been designed to analyze this information and compare it with the broad spectrum of data we've assembled over the years. Once having analyzed the information, the system will then create personally tailored solutions just for you, Mr. Jackson. Ways to secure the kind of preferential treatment we talked about earlier, but at the lowest possible cost. Ways of controlling your money and using it to your advantage, not someone else's. These solutions will then be prepared in the form of a financial report that I'll deliver to you personally and review with you at that time. Should any of our solutions make sense to you, we'll be more than happy to help you implement them. If not, then at least we'll have started the process of becoming better acquainted so that we may be of assistance to you some other time. In any case, the financial report is yours at absolutely no cost whatsoever. It's our way of saying we're serious about what we do and would be happy to work with you, whether now or in the future. So let's review the questionnaire together. And when we're done, I'll provide you with a summary of some of the remarkable new things that are happening in the world to control money. And then I'll take your information back so we can prepare your financial report. Okay? The fifth thing Johnny Jones does in the needs analysis presentation is complete the money management questionnaire. The sixth thing Johnny Jones does is provide the prospective customer with the information he promised and show him how relevant it is to the financial report he'll be preparing for him. He could have done this at the outset of their meeting, during the needs analysis questioning process, or now at the end. The seventh thing Johnny Jones does in the needs analysis presentation is make an appointment with the prospective customer to return with the financial report, reminding him that Johnny Jones will have some valuable solutions for him at no cost, and that Johnny will take whatever time is necessary to help the prospective customer understand those solutions, whether he decides to implement them or not. Upon completion of the needs analysis presentation, Johnny Jones will have made an appointment that will bring him to the third benchmark in the PowerPoint selling process, the solutions presentation. the solutions presentation. The solutions presentation is the easiest component of the PowerPoint selling process, because if Johnny Jones has done his job effectively up to this point, the sale is already made. Most salespeople think that selling is closing. It isn't. Selling is opening. That's what the needs analysis presentation does. It opens up the prospective customer to a deeper experience of his frustration and to the opportunities available to him by going through the questioning process with you. You now have something to give him. Remarkable new things that will make it possible for him to receive preferential treatment in the financial arena so as to secure the kind of control over his money he deserves and at a preferentially low cost. In other words, by knowing you, or Johnny Jones, your prospective customer is going to, first, be on the inside of the financial winner's circle with people who are in the know. Second, be treated like important people are. Third, use money like the pros do. And four, gain control over his life. And he's going to get all of this without paying too high a price for it. What more could anyone ask for? The solutions presentation simply provides the rational armament for the emotional commitment. Remember that? Here, Johnny Jones brings the prospect up to date by reviewing everything he said and did during the needs analysis presentation. The prospect has forgotten all those psychographically compelling things by now. But he won't for long. They're a part of him. Then Johnny Jones reviews in great, patient, and earnest detail every last word, comma, and number in his prospective customer's financial report. He asks questions to make certain that the prospect feels that this is his financial report, not Walter Mitty Company's financial report. And when Johnny Jones is done, when he's reviewed all of the components of the financial report prepared just for his prospect, Mr. Jackson, he asks him this question. Of the options we've suggested here, Mr. Jackson, which do you feel would best serve you right now? And then waits for the answer, because the next person who speaks is going to make a purchase. If that's Johnny Jones, he's going to buy a no sale. And that's all. Except for writing up the sale. Of course, there's everything else to do. What happens when the prospect says this? What happens when the prospect asks me that? And so forth. But believe me, whether you're selling sheets and pillowcases, computers, swimming pools, flowers and fertilizer, canaries, puppies, or Quonset huts, the PowerPoint selling process will work for you. How do I know that? Because it already has. But if the process is to work for you, you must be willing to go through it the same way every single time. Using the same words, the same way, every time. Reviewing the financial report the same way, every time. And by doing it the same way, every single time, you will not have a selling person, but a selling system. A soft system. A completely predictable technology for producing formerly unpredictable results. And you'll be able to tell just how predictable it is through the use of an information system. Information systems. For an information system to interact with the soft system in our example, it should provide you with the following information. Information. How many calls were made? Benchmark 1. How many prospects were reached? Benchmark 2. How many appointments were scheduled? Benchmark 3. How many appointments were confirmed? Benchmark 4. How many appointments were held? Benchmark 5. How many needs analysis presentations were scheduled? Benchmark 6. How many needs analyses were confirmed? Benchmark 7. How many needs analyses were completed? Benchmark 8. How many solutions presentations were scheduled? Benchmark 9. How many solutions presentations were confirmed? Benchmark 10. How many solutions presentations were completed? Benchmark 11. How many solutions were sold? Benchmark 12. What was the average dollar value of the sale? Benchmark 13. The information should be recorded on a form, either manually or as a database on your computer. The information system will track the activity of your selling system from benchmark to benchmark. It will tell you an astonishing number of things. It could tell you the rate of conversion between any two benchmarks in your selling process. It could tell you at which benchmark any particular salesperson needs help. Which of your people are on the system, that is, using the selling system verbatim, and which ones are off it? If you had calculated the cost of making a call, you could then calculate the cost of completing the next benchmark in the process, and from that derive the next, and so on, until you calculate the actual cost of making one sale. In short, the information system could tell you the things you need to know. Things you don't know now. Things you need to know in order to develop, control, and change your selling system. And things you also need to know in finance and production and product development. If your system strategy is the glue that holds your franchise prototype together, then information is the glue that holds your system's strategy together. It tells you when and why you need to change. Without it, you might as well put on a blindfold, have someone turn you around 3 times, and set out with a dart in your hand, waiting for a signal from the heavens to throw it. Not a very promising game, but one it seems most people in small business are determined to play. Hard systems, soft systems, information systems. Things, actions, ideas, information. The stuff of which our lives are made, and the stuff of your business as well. Do you see how difficult it is to separate one from the other? Do you see how intertwined they are? Do you now understand what I mean by your business system, and why it is absolutely essential that you begin to think of your business as a fully integrated system? That to approach any part of your business as though it were separate from all the rest would be lunacy, because everything in your business affects everything else in your business. That your primary aim and your strategic objective and your organizational strategy and your management strategy and your people strategy and your marketing strategy and your system strategy, all of them are totally interdependent rather than independent of one another. That the success of your business development program totally depends on your appreciation of that integration, and that your prototype is that integration. If you understand all of that, then this book has been worth our time. If you don't, take off the blindfold, because there's no going around one more time. We've got business to attend to. There's no time left to trust a dart in the dark. Well, we were almost done. Sarah knew it, and I knew it. All that was left was to tie the pieces together, to help her to integrate everything we had talked about together, to help her to see how it was all applicable, indeed essential, to her business all about pies. "I understand what you mean by hard systems," she said. "The sign in my shop, the floors, the walls, the display cases, the tables, my people's uniforms, and so forth. In other words, all of the visual elements of my business and the way they all fit together. In fact, when it's all done correctly, the entire business should look like one fully integrated, beautifully designed system." "I even understand what you mean by information systems," she continued. "My ability to extract from the day-to-day operation of my shops," she was already thinking about four shops rather than one, "how many pies are sold, what kind of pies, the time they were sold, how many customers came in each shop and when, how many bought pies to go, how many slices of pie were sold to eat on the premises, how many of the customers who bought pie to eat on the premises bought a pie to go, and so forth. And I can imagine a good deal more than that I would like to know now that I've begun to think about it. What I don't fully understand is the soft systems part. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? I can't possibly imagine my people using, what did you call it, the PowerPoint selling system?" "I suspect you do without realizing it," I said. "Remember what I talked about early on when we were discussing innovation? Hi, have you been in here before? As opposed to, hi, can I help you? Well, what's your version of that? Remember when we talked about the game worth playing and the recruitment process the manager used at the hotel? What about the script he used when he told the story about the boss's game? What's your version of that? And remember when we talked about the hotel's checklists and then went on to describe the management system that defined them? What's your version of that? In fact," I continued, "every written or verbal communication with anyone who comes into contact with your business is a soft system. What so few of us understand is the power of those words when they are totally integrated. That your recruitment script and your shop's name and the training you conduct in your school and the words in your customer brochures and your ads, everything you say must work together just as the visual components of your shop must work together to make one powerfully effective message. That you are all about pies and that there is no one, absolutely no one else like you. There was no one else telling the same story. There was no one else using these same words in exactly the same way as you are. And that these words represent the idea behind All About Pies, the idea that comes from your mind and your mind alone, the idea that your aunt understood so well and that you understand so well, the idea of your business, which is the lifeblood of your business, which is the heart of your business, which is the spirit of your business. And you know now how valuable that spirit is, Sarah. It's got to be cherished. It's got to be shared with others. It's got to be set free upon the world. That's what soft systems are. Do you get it now? Do you see how all of this fits together into one lovely, endurable, however ever-changing, wonderful whole? Can you see now why I say that the technician's role is not enough by far? That there's so much more to be done if your business is ever to live up to its potential? And that it's fun? Sarah was grinning from ear to ear. Chapter 19. A Letter to Sarah. Freedom does not come automatically. It is achieved. And it is not gained in a single bound. It must be achieved each day. Rollo May, Man's Search for Himself. Dear Sarah, it has been said that there are no accidents in the universe, and so I might consider it to be providential that on this very day that I'm writing this letter to you, I have just finished reading, for the third time, Rollo May's remarkable book, Man's Search for Himself. What a lesson that book holds for all of us in business who would believe that today's hot subjects of core values, meaning, purpose, and empowerment are advanced thinking, when in fact, Rollo May spoke more eloquently about those very same subjects in 1953. For that matter, who among us today in business recalls Rollo May's Age of Anxiety, or Camus, or Dostoevsky, or Kierkegaard, or Kafka, or Orwell, or T.S. Eliot in The Hollow Men, or David Riesman in The Lonely Crowd? To them, however, the question was not one of success in business, but of life and death. If we had such a yearning for values in 1953, when Rollo May's book was first published, and we have such a yearning for values today, what's happened to us in the interim? The Cold War? A trip to the moon? Korea? The Vietnam War? Cambodia? The sexual revolution? The feminist revolution? The civil rights explosion? The psychological revolution? The New Age manifesto and the coming millennium? One hell of a lot, I would say. And yet, after all that, and 40 years, we're still searching for meaning, for something to believe in, and speaking about it as though it were brand new. What lessons haven't we learned here at the end of the 20th century, Sarah? Maybe we just don't care enough. Meaning, it seems to me, is the product of caring, not vice versa. What we care about, we value. And so, as I look around, I see that we're in some very fundamental way disconnected from caring sufficiently to be able to find true meaning in the things that we do. Which is not to say that we don't care about anything. We obviously do. We care about making money. We care about being safe. We care about being protected. We care about the Super Bowl. But I think that the things we have come to care about are insignificant when placed on the scale that Dostoevsky or Camus or Tolstoy or Kierkegaard or Kafka or the Old Testament or the New Testament or Rollo May would use. The problem is, Sarah, we're just not very serious people these days. We even speak about values, when we speak about them, as though they were a commodity like a sweater or a pair of Gucci pumps that can be acquired by writing a check. Much like the leadership, empowerment, management, relationship, and quality training seminars that abound today. As though by getting a little training, we'll suddenly find ourselves full of more substantial stuff. I think not, Sarah. I think that we, playing our endgame at the bottom of the 20th century, are going to need one hell of a lot more than anything our trainers have in store for us. I think we need a shock, a self-administered shock, so jolting, so outrageous, so unsympathetic to our little wants that we'll either be blown off the planet we've each shaped for ourselves, our personal little spaces, when we least expect it, or we'll burn to a crisp right there in the spot, never to be heard from again. And therein lies the problem, Sarah, and of course, the opportunity. How does one come to the point in his or her life when he or she is not only ready, but eager and willing, however terrifying the prospect might be, to self-execute such a leap of faith without any guarantees that it will do any good. That, dear Sarah, is where I believe we left each other not too long ago, at a crossroads, where I stood and watched you walk off on your newly discovered path, thinking to myself that I knew where you were going and what you would discover there, and at the same time realizing I knew nothing of the sort, that the path you had chosen reached both forward in time and back to your childhood, and the spirit you had thought you lost. But what I know to be true from my own life experience is that you will not truly rediscover your spirit in the past, but will discover it is waiting for you in the future on the path you have now chosen. Your spirit isn't behind you. It is way ahead of you. It has already made its choice. All that needed to happen was for you to make yours, and you were together again. Pretty metaphysical for a hard-headed guy like me, perhaps. But while I can't prove it, I know without a shadow of a doubt that it is true. I know because the very same thing has happened to me time and time again when I was open to it. I know that my spirit is waiting out there in front of me on one of any number of 1,000 paths, and that it's up to me to choose that one path on which my spirit waits, and to step out on it brightly, without hesitation, to pursue the I, which is the greatest one I can possibly be, to be spirit full, that is, spiritual, that is, to be in touch with my soul. And there, in our spirit, Sarah, is where meaning lies. There, in what your aunt called caring. It is your spirit that cares, Sarah. While your parents and teachers thought it was disruptive and tried to take it away from you, your aunt knew, Sarah, what you've just found out. That your spirit was waiting there all the time. It hadn't gone anywhere. You had. And the path you are now on is the same path you and your aunt were on, there in the kitchen, and there in your little girl's bed on the summer morning as you breathed in the rich, delicate summer air, and there among the four oaks, and there with your hand on the face of the black horse. Your path has always been there for you, Sarah. You simply got lost. You didn't trust it. In your need to be assured, as any little girl would, that your parents wouldn't leave you and that your teachers would love you, you became disconnected from yourself. But fortunately, not forever. Because this path you're now on, this entrepreneurial path, winds around corners that will amaze you at times and even shock you at others. To be sure, it will be anything but certain. But that's why it's so exciting. It's the path of surprise. It's the path of constant engagement. And because it's all those things, it is truly the path of life. Or as Rollo May might have called it, the path of freedom. He said, "Thus freedom is not just the matter of saying yes or no to a specific decision. It is the power to mold and create ourselves. Freedom is the capacity, to use Nietzsche's phrase, to become what we truly are." And so, Sarah, while we've talked a great deal about your business and its relationship to you, while we've spoken about planning and systems and controls and management, about people development and organizational development and marketing development and all those many parts of your business you must become not only aware of, but attentive to, I would be remiss if I left you with the impression that any of those things will make any difference at all unless you remember one thing. Keep the curtain up. The curtain is your comfort zone. And your comfort zone has been the false mask you put on when you were a little girl, because it was safe when your spirit was not. Your comfort zone has been the curtain you've placed in front of your face and through which you view the world. Your comfort zone has been the tight little cozy planet on which you've lived, knowing all the places to hide because it's so small. Your comfort zone has seized you before, Sarah, and it can seize you again when you're least prepared for it, because it knows what it means to you. Because it knows how much you want to be comfortable. Because it knows what price you're willing to pay for the comfort of being in control. The ultimate price, your life. So, Sarah, if this new path, if living with your spirit means anything to you at all, if you truly, truly care about it, then guard it with your life. Because comfort overtakes us all when we're least prepared for it. Comfort makes cowards of us all. And so goodbye for now. Please let me know how you're doing, how the business is going. And remember, my heart will be with you wherever you are. Michael Gerber. Epilogue. Bringing the dream back to American small business. You should know now that a man of knowledge lives by acting, not by thinking about acting, nor by thinking about what he will think about when he is finished acting. A man of knowledge chooses a path with heart and follows it. Carlos Castaneda, A Separate Reality. This book is not simply a prescription for success. It's a call to arms. But this call to arms is not a call to do battle. It's a call to learning. How to feel, think, and act differently and more productively, more humanly than our existing skills and understanding allow. Today's world is a difficult place. Humankind has experienced more change in the past 20 years than it has in the 2000 that preceded them. Boundaries that once served us, geographically, politically, socially, emotionally, no longer exist. The rules are constantly changing. But people cannot live without boundaries, without structure, without rules. So new ones have sprung up and proliferated in order to fill the void left by those that no longer seem to serve our New Age condition. Unfortunately, in a world of accelerated change, there is little time for rules to take hold. As soon as the new rules are upon us, they too are swallowed up in the insatiable vortex of change, followed all too quickly by more rules and then still more. The result of all this change is chaos and disorder, each change bringing with it an even more turbulent world than the one before it, with fewer and fewer traditions to hold on to, a world in trouble where confusion reigns. But the trouble didn't start out there in the world. If it did, we'd really be in trouble. Because who among us knows enough to control or even have an impact on what's happening out there? If it is so difficult for us to do anything about our businesses, how in the world are we going to do anything about the world? We can't. It's that simple. And any call to arms that suggests we can is a stopgap measure, a call to disillusionment, and ultimately to disaster. Because our stopgap measures are not solutions. Our feeble attempts to fix the world can't change the overall condition. If they work at all, they can only change the circumstances in which we find ourselves at any given moment. No, we can't change the world out there. and fortunately, we don't have to. We can begin much closer to home. We can begin in here. In fact, if we're to succeed, we must. Because the chaos isn't out there in everyone else. It's not out there in the world. The chaos is in here, in you and in me. The world's not the problem. You and I are. The world's not in chaos. We are. The world's apparent chaos is only a reflection of our own inner turmoil. If the world reflects a lack of good sense, it's because each one of us reflects the same. If the world acts as if it doesn't know what it's doing, it's because each one of us acts the same. If the world is violent and greedy and heartless and inhuman and often just plain stupid, it's because you and I are that way. So if the world is going to be changed, we must first change our lives. Unfortunately, we haven't been taught to think that way. We're an out-there society, accustomed to thinking in terms of them against us. We want to fix the world so that we can remain the same. And for an out-there society, coming inside is a problem. But now is the time to learn how. Now is the time to change. Because unless we do, the chaos will remain. And we can't afford to live in this kind of chaos much longer. We're simply running out of time. Bridging the Gap. And that's what this book is really about. Bridging the gap. Between the outside and the inside. Between the world out there and the world in here. And your small business can become that bridge. The bridge between you and the world. The bridge that can draw together the world out there and the world in here in such a way as to make both more human. In such a way that makes both more productive. In such a way that makes both worlds work. For like the boss's hotel, your small business can become your dojo, your practice hall. Joe Hyams, in his book Zen and the Martial Arts, tells us what a dojo is. A dojo is a miniature cosmos where we make contact with ourselves, our fears, anxieties, reactions, and habits. It is an arena of confined conflict where we confront an opponent who is not an opponent, but rather a partner engaged in helping us understand ourselves more fully. It is a place where we can learn a great deal in a short time about who we are and how we react in the world. The conflicts that take place inside the dojo help us handle conflicts that take place outside. The total concentration and discipline required to study martial arts carries over to daily life. The activity in the dojo calls on us to constantly attempt new things. So it is also a source of learning. In Zen terminology, a source of self-enlightenment. And that is exactly what a small business is. A small business is a place that responds instantly to any action we take. A place where we can practice implementing ideas in a way that changes lives. A place where we can begin to test all of the assumptions we have about ourselves. It is a place where questions are at least as important as answers, if not more so. It is a place where generalizations must give way to specifics. It is a place that demands our attention. A place where rules must be followed and order preserved. A place that is practical, not idealistic. But a place where idealism must be present for the practical to serve. It is a place where the world is reduced to manageable size, small enough to be responsive, but big enough to test everything we have. A true practice hall. A world of our own. A world of our own. And that, after all, is the dream of American small business. The dream that has served as the catalyst for so many entrepreneurial and not-so-entrepreneurial efforts to create a world of our own. What is this entrepreneurial revolution people are talking about today, where millions of us are going into business for ourselves? It's nothing more than a flight from the world of chaos out there into a world of our own. It's a yearning for structure, for form, for control, and for something else as well. Something more personal, something less distinct, yet much more intimately connected with who we are as human beings. It's a yearning for relationship with ourselves and the world in a way impossible to experience in a job. Unfortunately, as we've already seen, the dream is rarely realized. Most small businesses fail. And the reason is obvious. We bring our chaos with us. We don't change. We try to change out there. We try to change the world by starting a small business, but we stay the same. And so the small business that was started to give us a new world becomes instead the worst job in the world. The lesson to learn from all of this is simple. We can't change our lives by starting out there. All we can produce in the process is more chaos. We can only change our lives and create a world of our own if we first understand how such a world is constructed, how it works, and the rules of the game. And that means we have to study the world and how we are in it. And in order to do that, we need a world small enough in scope and complexity to study. A small business is just such a world. And a business development program can be a means to study it most effectively. And the franchise prototype can provide our study with the discipline it needs to succeed. Innovation, quantification, and orchestration become the practice that brings us and our opponent, whoever that may be, to the discovery of our limits, our weaknesses, our strengths. To the discovery of what really works in the world, rather than what our imaginations might wish would work. For in a martial arts contest, there's no room for imagination. We could get killed out there. Innovation, quantification, and orchestration provide the belief system of our business, the philosophical bedrock of our interaction with the world. They become our source for learning, for creating, for expanding beyond our self-imposed limits. And through innovation, quantification, and orchestration, our business can become something more than merely a place to go to work. It can become a place that satisfies more of ourselves than just the technician. There is a place in business development for the whole of ourselves, for the innovator, for the maintainer, for the doer, for the entrepreneur, the manager, and the technician in each and every one of us. Your small business and mine can give us more life. An idea for action. But does it work? Will the model of the franchise prototype work for you? There is an old Chinese proverb that says, when you hear something, you will forget it. When you see something, you will remember it. But not until you do something will you truly understand it. In short, my answer is a resounding yes. It does work. every single time it's applied.